Digital Radio on the app, on your smartphone, on X, YouTube, and Facebook. The Sportscast World Cup coverage.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
Sportscast, June 26, 2026. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to and all your channels, YouTube, Facebook, X, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. And you can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online digital radio. You can visit our website, thesportscast.net, or check out our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. Also look us up on X and Instagram, The Sportscast One. The U.S. lose against Turkey last minute in the eighth minute in injury time, but they still advance, and a couple of teams advance. Quite interesting draw so far for the knockout stage. And join us, a man that's back in stateside, Hal Phillips. Welcome back.
Thank you, Santi. Always a pleasure. I am back stateside, but now I am offshore on Nantucket Island.
Nice. And did you win that golf tournament or something you were doing? Or
oh no, that was a tournament. That's a golf travel story that I was doing.
That's right.
In the Netherlands, and caught some excellent matches, including Sweden and the Netherlands on a beautiful city street in a sidewalk cafe with, you know, 40 Swedes and 100 Dutch. It was excellent.
Interesting. All right, let's get back to stateside here, U.S. ends their World Cup stage with a loss to Turkey. The score was 3-2. It was a dramatic ending. Turkey obviously was already out of the World Cup, but they played with pride. And Can Ayhan scored in the 98th minute for Turkey to win. The U.S. played their B team, except McKennie. He played, was the only one starting from the original squad for the past few games. Hal, your thoughts on this matchup, even though we talked about offline, meaningless, but what'd you think?
I thought it was a net positive. It was a bummer of an ending. It's just a terrible way to end what I thought was a really positive outing, and we can count the reasons why. Pulisic came back. He's healthy. They showed that they have a couple of options in the middle of the defense in Austin Trusty and Mark McKenzie in case someone gets hurt. Even Miles Robinson, whom I didn't think we would see in this World Cup, got a run in and looked pretty competent. I think we don't have to worry about Tim Weah getting time. He was terrible. So that rules him out and opens it up for someone like Zendejas, who played pretty well. So I thought it was a net positive on the whole. And I thought the biggest net positive was Sebastian Berhalter, former coach Greg Berhalter's son, who played Tyler Adams' position in the withdrawn midfield and was great. He was not just great on set pieces and scored a goal. He was great with the ball at his feet, wanted the ball at his feet. I was really impressed. This is the biggest game he's ever played against quality opponent, and he showed himself to be totally up to the task.
Definitely. What a game. I would definitely piggyback Tim Weah did not have a good game. This B squad, Hal, was definitely a drop from the A squad. Is that something that should be a red flag for us, or what do you think?
No, I think that we played 9 new starters, and they nearly beat and should have beaten or should have gotten a point off of the team that was supposed to win the group, who played 7 of their starters. They put in 4 new guys. Look, they're a good team, and we battled. We scored first, gave up a couple of goals, and looked shaky, gathered ourselves. We threw on some guys who were starters, including Alex Freeman and Pulisic in the second half, and everyone played well. I thought they worked hard, and I thought we looked dangerous throughout, and we had every chance to win the game. Look, if we wouldn't know when we'd be talking about this if we didn't give up that goal in the 98th minute of a game that did not matter. And Pochettino upbraided the media core afterwards, quite rightly. He said, hey, don't forget, we won the group, and we're going through against Bosnia. The draw has really fallen really well for the U.S., and we can talk about that in particular. But don't get hung up on this. It would have been nice to win. It was a good effort by a bunch of guys who, you know, 6 or 7 of them who showed themselves to be perfectly capable to play at this level. That's a win.
Yes, and as Hal mentioned, the knockout bracket is forming up, and yeah, we are 99% sure, I think maybe 100 by now, that the U.S. will be playing Bosnia on July 1st in San Francisco. I would say this team is the easiest from the European sides, but your thoughts over this matchup as of right now?
Look, Bosnia-Herzegovina is no pushover. They beat Italy to get into this tournament. They are full of European top flight pros. They're just folks you haven't heard of because they don't play at Barcelona. They're a good squad, but they can be beaten, and I believe that we will beat them. People might recognize Edin Dzeko's name. He played for many years in the top leagues across Europe. He's about 40 years old now. We may see him for an hour or a half an hour if they fall behind. But this team is solid. They struggled to beat Canada, who I don't think is very good. So I think that pegs them as a team that the U.S. should beat. You know, you can't overthink it. You prepare. You come in and treat everybody like you're playing Brazil. And if you beat them 3-0 and can throw some guys on at the end and give them some rest, great. But I don't expect anyone to look past this team. But they're not a bunch of mugs. They can play, and we're going to have to play a good game to beat them.
Yeah, looking forward to that round 16. Now, if we do beat Bosnia, we could potentially face an Egypt or Korea. They're not a top 10 team, so looking good for us to get into the quarters.
Yeah, this draw could not have been any better for us. Number one, we get Bosnia and not Canada in LA. And this was when Canada was, you know, has beaten us the last two times we played them, but they're missing four or five starters at this point. They're a bit of a shell. Egypt, not a great team. They can score. They're a little bit like us. They go forward quite well. They've got Salah, and they've got Manouche, who plays for Man City. They can put the ball in the net, but they're going to give up goals, and we could win that game 4-2. Korea's been a big disappointment. They were terrible, and they are lucky to be through into this position. But in terms of the U.S. draw, couldn't be better. There were scenarios that had us playing Belgium in the in that round of 16. There were scenarios that had us playing Argentina in that scenario. So this is way better.
Hey, I'll take it every day and twice on Sunday.
Yes.
Late breaking news past hour. How found out about in the last couple minutes that the USSF, the United States Soccer Federation, has presented U.S. men's national team coach Mauricio Pochettino for a contract extension until 2030. Obviously Pochettino has not accepted it yet, but the offer is on the table. How do you think about this?
Well, a couple things. If I was Pochettino's agent, I would say, don't say anything. Thank them for the offer, but I have a job to do. We'll talk when the tournament is over. The second thing I would say is don't take the job. It's very difficult to coach two World Cup cycles in a row. He's in, you know, the midst of a purple patch here. I mean, things, you know, they're calling for his head 5 months ago. Now everyone loves him. So, but I don't think that just sway him. I think he's got an offer to go coach Milan after this tournament is over. And if he's a smart guy, and I think he is, he'll take that job. Look, it doesn't matter how good the coach is. Being a national team coach is weird. You don't really have the team with you 90% of the time. Most of the time you're running around, you know, scouting games and talking to players on the phone and doing dinners and helping the federation raise money. I don't know that that's really what he wants to do. This was a project that he took on, and, you know, they're the host country, the most, you know, the richest country on earth. And he's made a name for himself. I think it would work out best for everyone if he goes to Milan when this is over, but who knows what he's really thinking. And he doesn't have to tell me.
Yeah. To piggyback on that. Yeah. Most coaches who go for another World Cup run cycle don't do well. They kind of crash and burn a bit, except the Uruguay coach. He lasted for like 8 cycles or something like that. But
and the guy who coached Portugal, Santos, for 12 years, and I'm not sure why that happened, but they had good coaches, but, you know, he did well with them. It takes a certain kind of mentality. But like you said, Bruce Arena tried to do it twice, mistake. Berhalter scratched and clawed to do it twice against everyone's better judgment. What a waste of time that was. It just doesn't make any sense. But
also, it's Klinsmann interesting too.
Sorry?
Also, Jurgen Klinsmann.
Oh, of course. And, you know, but it's a good gig. It's not very, you know, strapping in terms of time, you know, and you get paid well. But I think if you really have designs on coaching at the top, you know, level, this job has done its job for Poch. Yeah. He's got a gig already lined up in Milan. And if he doesn't want to go there, there are plenty of other people who will have him. I think that, you know, this is the difference between coaching club and country. It's just so much more hands-on, you know, at the club level. You're with the team every day. You're really be able to implement tactics. You can really make a team the way you want it to look. You can bring in the players you want over time. You know, national team coaches, these are all-star teams, or as we say in the United States, dream teams. And it's you're working with what you have. If you don't have a striker to your liking, like we didn't in 2022, you can't just bring one in. You got to play Jesus Ferreira. So, you know, it's a different animal, and he's done beautifully so far. And if he can get us to the quarterfinals, and the draw honestly means that he probably should at this stage, he'll have done his job and more. And then, you know, once you get to the quarterfinals, anything can happen.
No, 100%. It's funny how every time a club was looking for a new coach, Pochettino's name always been brought up. Even for Tottenham, I think this past couple months, they were thinking about getting him back.
Yep, and I suppose that they considered it. I don't know that he did. He's done the job there. I mean, why would you go back? And if, but what I can say is that, you know, his club coaching career, once he left Tottenham, you know, was just okay. He didn't win anything. He didn't take anybody to the Champions League final like he did Spurs. I'm not saying that's anyone's fault. But, you know, I like the guy. He, I think, has been patient, and he has been not just patient with the results that his team puts forward, but he's been patient with us, with Americans who don't really understand how this stuff works. And he has taught us a lot about how to think about tournaments. And that includes being unrealistically positive. Like, why not us? Why don't we plan to go to the semifinal? What's this? Oh, if we don't get out of the round of 16, it's a failure. The one thing that I've written about, you know, the last couple of weeks, and you guys can check me out on Threads at siblingrivalry.halphillips. That's usually where I pop the stuff first. These projected forecasts of round of 32 opponents, they're meaningless until look at all the different, you know, matchups that no one was expecting. No one thought we would be playing Egypt, Korea winner. They were talking about, you know, they were talking about Belgium from that group. Belgium didn't get it done. And here we are. So I think I would be bummed if I was Morocco, who's got to play, what, the Netherlands? And there's another incredible matchup at the round of 32 that I'm forgetting right now because I'm losing it.
France-Sweden.
France-Sweden is one. Netherlands-Morocco. Yeah. And there's another absolutely killer matchup. Oh, is it
Brazil-Japan?
Brazil-Japan.
Yeah.
What a game.
That's a good game.
Now, that was always trouble because those two groups were always matched up, you know, first versus second and second versus first. So, you know, I think that Brazil probably felt pretty good getting out of that, not having to play the Netherlands. But Japan's really good. And both those games are first class matchups in the very first round, which, of course, everyone said was going to suck. Well, there's great theater here. Look at that. Ivory Coast of Norway. Excellent game.
That's a good game. Yeah, and they play a little bit later today, Norway, France. Anyways, let's get back into yesterday's game. Ecuador beat Germany 2-1. I couldn't believe it, but they had to win Ecuador. A goal by Gonzalo Plata completed a memorable win. And it, Germany already is in the group, in the knockout round already. And, hey, they beat Germany in New York, New Jersey. Not bad.
Yeah. It was an excellent game. I called this one because Ecuador is better than they had shown. They've been really unlucky, you know, sort of got surprised by Curaçao and got tied by, you know, by these Islanders. No one expected that to happen, and they had to win this game in order to make the knockout round. They didn't dominate Germany. It was obviously, you don't dominate Germany, but they gave up an early goal and came back and scored two to win it. They looked fabulous in doing so. And who knew there were so many Ecuadorians in the metropolitan New York era? Outstanding crowd support. You look at that group, Cote d'Ivoire, Ecuador, Germany, and then Curaçao, obviously, way better than anyone expected. That may have been our group of death because there's not a bad team in the bunch there. Curaçao played very well in dropping a 2-0 decision to Ivory Coast. They had a chance to go forward if they could have got a win. But those are four good teams. You just never know at this tournament. I mean, who would have thought that Egypt was going to win that freaking game, that, you know, take that group?
They won.
They've never won a World Cup game until, last week. So you got to play the games. And I was happy for the U.S. that they put such a good performance in after two games where, you know, no one expected them to win both of those, and they did. So you just got to play the games. That's what the beauty of the World Cup really is.
Yeah, no matter how bad it is, show up. You got to show up. And like you were saying, everyone thought the France group was a group of death. No, there was multiple. This one was definitely one of them, Germany, Ivory Coast. So looking forward to the next couple of games. Netherlands dominated Tunisia en route to a 3-1 win. Now Netherlands will face Morocco, as we mentioned before, and Japan to play round 32 versus Brazil. Your thoughts over the Netherlands? Everyone's saying they're favorite. I never think Netherlands is a favorite. They always choke at the end. So your thoughts over their performance?
I think the betting line is already favoring Morocco to win that game. But Morocco has really not been the same since they had to play the final of the African Cup of Nations at home, and we're beaten by Senegal. And I think they're gonna pay for that bit of bad sportsmanship, getting that annulled and taking the title away from Senegal post facto. That is some bad juju right there. Look, they're both really good teams, and the Dutch. I was just there. The Dutch don't pay attention to these tournaments until the knockout rounds, and the Dutch do disappoint. They've never won, but they've been in three finals. But they know how to win games at this level, and I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Morocco and did it convincingly. I'm not sure that Morocco can really score goals against a first class team. They have one or two guys who can do it. Hakimi has scored goals out of the back. They have guys who could score out of midfield. They have this young striker Ibrahim Diaz, but a new guy who's young, and I'm not familiar with him until he showed up at this tournament. He didn't play in the African Cup of Nations. I can't read that. I'm on my phone. It's way too small, dude.
I got you. Akabi is number 20 up top, and then Al Kanous in the midfield. Sabari
is the guy. Okay. He's a comer. But look, they're both, if you're a neutral, you couldn't ask for a better round of 32 matchup. I mean, Egypt and South Korea, that is not even a third of the game that Brazil, Japan, or Morocco and the Netherlands will be. And, you know, in a round of 32, if you get 5, 6, 7 good matchups, you're doing pretty good. So, so far, I'm impressed with the tournament and the setup. We can talk about that more if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Sweden. Drew in Texas, you're one of the 8 best third place teams. We'll also play in the round of 32 versus a group winner that has yet to be determined. So we'll see with that. Group F, finish off Netherlands 1-2 Japan, 3 Sweden, 4 Tunisia.
Right.
And let's talk about Canada play South Africa in the World Cup stage. How about that? South Africa, Hal?
South Africa, for anyone who watched the tournament opener in Mexico City, the idea that they went through is amazing. They looked terrible against Mexico. And then they went down to 10 men after a bad 20 minutes, and the game was over. So I guess it was not really fair to judge them harshly. They were playing with 10 men. They come back and tie the next match against Czechia and then beat South Korea to get that second place finish, not third place, second place. So I think this is a great draw for both teams. Canada could have gotten a much better team than South Africa, so they must be pleased. And South Africa feels exactly the same way. I'm worried about Canada. Last summer, during the Copa America, during the Nations League, they really had it going on. But look, their best guy, Alphonso Davies, hasn't played a minute. Their best striker, Jonathan David, scored the other night. Actually got two, but he's not looked good. This team's hollow, and now they're playing this fellow Cornelius at center back, who's about 40 years old. He's slower than Tim Ream. They're not good, and if they can win this game, it'll be a huge accomplishment. But I think they have a shot. They're physical, and they're fit, and they're playing in North America, and South Africa may feel like they have already achieved what they had never achieved. They've never qualified for a knockout round.
Yeah, didn't do it when they were hosts in 2010 either.
I guess I didn't realize that. I heard it and read it after the match. So, I'm rooting for Canada. I'm rooting for Mexico. Even if Mexico won't root for us, I'm rooting for Mexico. And so I want to see them do well. I'm just not impressed with the team. I think Jesse Marsh has done a good job with them. But they're just not that good. And they can't afford not to have two or three of their best players on the field at all times. And now they're getting nicked up. And I guess it wouldn't surprise me if they lost this game. They're having trouble scoring goals, and I think they're going to give some up.
All right, let's go to the format that we're talking about. It's an interesting format, how obviously from previous World Cups you play the first place of the group to the runners up, but this time is kind of mixed with the third place teams. Your thoughts with this format? Obviously, you know, interesting draws so far, like Brazil versus Japan or Netherlands Morocco, but what do you think about this format FIFA has done?
Well, I have to admit that 2 weeks ago I didn't like it because of exactly what you described. It's so much neater and cleaner when you have, you know, eight groups of four and the top two teams, you know, from each of those groups go and play knockout, you know, starting with the round of 16. It's neat and clean. So what they've done is obviously increase that by 16 teams. So they end up having to make up, you know, take, you know, 12 groups of four, and the top two teams make it, and they take the eight best third place finishers. And we should point out that these mock-ups, these forecasts, aren't set in stone because we're still playing the final group games. And Scotland, I believe, is not going to make it. They're already listed as being Mexico's opponent, but there are teams that are going to have points. It's all based on how many points you get, three for a win, one for a tie. So I think in the next day or two, Scotland will fall off of that list. I talked to a Scot in the security line today who was moping around, and I'm like, it's not done yet. He goes, I know it's not done, but it's done. That's the way the Scots are going home. That's all you need to know. But look, I thought 2 weeks ago that this was too many teams. It was unwieldy. I don't want eight third place teams. You're only eliminating 16 teams, you know, when you have 32 out of 48 making it. But I think what's happening here is, A, they're going to go to 64 teams, and we're going to have, 16 groups of four, and the top two teams are going to make it from each one. It's going to be cleaner. But look, things change. And I think one of the things that has been best about this tournament is we haven't had a rash of injuries. Why? Because when you have this many groups, you get a week off between games at the group stage. It's not nearly so taxing on the players when you have a week between games. So that's a huge positive. Everyone said, oh, you're diluting the field. Curaçao, Cape Verde, Egypt, Bosnia-Herzegovina, there's a dozen teams that have a chance to make the knockout and will make the knockout that no one thought would win a game. They're all getting points. I mean, the minnows here are doing tremendously well for a diluted field. They should be getting killed. They're not. I think that we are wrong to say that this field is diluted. And in terms of, you know, tactical scheming, I think the week off between games gives coaches and players a chance to get together and actually do training. I mean, that someone was talking about it. I think Pulisic was saying, we actually are training like we would normally. Normally, mm-hmm. You play a game and you have 3 days to rest, and then you're playing the next game. You don't have time. You're always resting. The format here, because it's longer, gives everyone more time to recover. And you know what? I wouldn't have said this 2 weeks ago, but I was worried about, you know, what it was going to be like to have 48 nations showing up in Trump's America. And, you know, but it's been a love fest. Everyone's, you know, the longer they're here, the better it's been. Then people have, you know, you hear about the Algerians getting taken such good care of, you know, in Kansas. This is happening all over the country. I think it's good for American culture. I think diversity is making a great name for itself, and the tournament is great. I would never have said this, but I think the time between games is a total plus. The field is not diluted, and the longer it goes, the more this plays out like a festival of world football. And this group stage is really just the last stage of qualifying. When it's over, we're going to have 32 teams, and they're going to be playing off, and we're going to be, you know, they're going to be rested. I mean, has anyone pulled a hamstring yet? I mean, I haven't seen a single one.
Just a broken leg from...
Yeah, just a broken leg from Kona. That's one of the guys that Canada's missing. I forgot to mention his name. So yeah. Anyway, I'm a fan. I'm not a fan of FIFA. They've stumbled into it. It was clearly a money grab to get more teams. But the longer the tournament goes, the more relaxed and player-friendly it becomes. And I think that's what we're seeing. And that's why we're seeing such incredible performances. There's more goals being scored. Teams are taking chances. And I think they're actually ready to play these games because they've actually been able to scheme for their opponents, which normally you can't do.
Yeah, quite something. The rest. This format is kind of warming up as well. Yeah. How I got to be honest. But we'll see. We'll still have another half of this World Cup and see how it goes. Let's go into predictions.
Yeah.
A lot of big games like today. Norway versus France up in New England in your area. What do you think is going to happen? This is the game to win first place in their group.
And maybe when I'm hedging my bets here, you can tell me what is actually at stake in terms of matchup. I mean, who does the winner get as opposed to who the loser gets?
That's right.
That's really what they're playing for here. And without that information at the tip of my tongue, I can't quite say. But I will also point out, Pasanti, as I think you know, I'm on fire with these predictions. I've called like five of six games by the score. So I think that Norway's had a good run, but I think that they're going to give up three goals to France. And Haaland will score one. 3-1 France.
3-1 France. Uruguay versus Spain. Uruguay has 2 points. How? Spain has 4 points. So there's a lot going on. Uruguay is more pressure to win, FYI.
Big time. And this is not a good Uruguay team. They've got some pieces, but they don't like Bielsa, their coach. And the thing about Uruguay is everyone respects them. No one likes them. And I don't believe Spain will take it easy on them, and I think they're going to thump them. And Uruguay is not going to go on to the next round, which is sort of a big deal. So I will say 2-0 Spain.
You know, interesting. I spoke to a Uruguayan, and they said that they don't like Argentina in general in soccer. Mm-hmm. So having Bielsa was not a good thing for them. That's what he said. But
there's that. Yeah. And then there's the idea that Bielsa is sort of this guru who everyone respects tactically, but he's never really won anything.
Correct.
And if you're Uruguay, your standards are very high. You've got to make a semifinal to have any cred. I think he took Chile to a Copa America. That's it.
Oh, wow. So forget about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So yeah, no one liked that hire. The players apparently really don't like him. And I don't think they're motivated to play. And I think Spain is motivated to send them home early.
FYI for the France-Norway game, whoever comes in second in that group will be playing Ivory Coast. And the first, winner of that group will face a third place team. So,
well, that's incentive not to lose. That I think they're both going to be going for it. Ivory Coast is really good. Ivory Coast is really good.
Very good. A lot of good players. Then the most expensive game of this World Cup: Colombia versus Portugal.
That is the most expensive game. Why?
Tickets are going up for $8,000.
Oh. I see. And let me say that I think Portugal is going to bust out, but I'm going to be watching that game. But I don't think 1-0. 1-0 Portugal, I think it's going to be scratch and claw. I like Colombia. I watched their game. Did you just fix the spelling on Colombia?
I did.
I was looking at it. I'm like, this dude is from Colombia or is of a Colombian heritage, and it's spelled wrong.
At least I didn't put the U instead of the O.
Yes, that would have been bad. That would have been bad. So yeah, I think I'll take Portugal 1-0. But I watched the Colombia match that they just played
against Congo.
And the Congo was one of these teams that, you know, got in because they expanded the field, and they tied their first match against Portugal. Huge accomplishment. But I thought they were bad against Colombia. They couldn't make simple passes. Did you watch the match?
I did watch the game while I was doing my Panini sticker swapping.
Yeah. it was not a good performance from the DR of the Congo. And yeah. So I think they have a chance to redeem themselves so they can get something of the last game. But
as you Uzbekistan, very winnable game for them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've played the two toughest teams. So just to go back to underline the point we made before, in Qatar, Africa got 5 bids to the World Cup. This year they have 9.
A lot.
And other than Tunisia, I think they're all alive. That upgrades the tournament field right away. Right. Asia has not had such a good tournament. But look at the teams that came from North America that wouldn't normally. Panama, Curacao, they have been, you know, poor Panama. They played really well. Just couldn't score. They could have won both those games. But to get back to this game.
Haiti scored two goals versus Croatia.
I forgot about Haiti. Shame on me. They played three good games. Right. And so that those are the minnows from CONCACAF. All these teams showed real quality. So, again, you got to congratulate FIFA for having the faith in the minnows, even if they did it as part of a money grab. And once you bring in 16 more teams, I think then you will have some minnows. But then it's a leisurely month-long qualifier to create this round of 32.
To become a league.
Yes, and they're going to be hosting that tournament, remember, in Uruguay, Spain and Portugal, and Morocco. So they're three continents celebrating 100 years. I think it's really smart. They're creating a festival feeling out of a knockdown, drag-out battle of attrition, which, you know, the World Cup largely is for teams that want to go far. This is much more relaxed, better for the players. But I like Portugal to claim this game. But I'm sort of rooting for Colombia because, God, as long as Ronaldo plays, I just don't like the way they play.
Yeah, it's interesting. He scored two goals in the previous game against Uzbekistan, so it seems like he's back. But we'll see against Colombia, a little bit more of a tougher opponent, even though arguably Congo was a good opponent as well. Anyways, a lot to close up. Good matches this weekend. Round of 32 begins Sunday. So the fun begins. The fun has already started, but the fun, more fun, is going to happen. What is the best way to reach you online? Talk about your book, Sibling Rivalry.
Sibling Rivalry is the definitive account of the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, and you can catch me there at siblingrivalry.halphillips. That's my Threads handle and my Instagram handle. I was interested, you know, Mexico has done very well, and they will play at least the next two games in Mexico City, and where everyone says, oh, they're unbeatable there. You know, not true anymore. One of the things that I realized and talk about a lot in this book is how difficult it is for Mexico to play games where they're expected to win, and they're not expected to win anywhere more than in Mexico City. Also, they've changed that, you know, they've changed the Azteca twice in the last 15 years, once to get ready for the NFL, and they took a bunch of seats out and everyone said it wasn't nearly as loud. And then they did it again to get ready for this tournament that we're watching now. So it's not as loud. It's full of luxury boxes. It's going to be full of big wigs who are paid the money to go to these games, not the fans who are going to make the noise and give that team support. Mexico, I think they'll win the group of 32 match, round of 16. That might be tough. The U.S., I think, has a much bigger home field advantage, playing in these massive stadiums with huge crowds. And in terms of, you know, they're not over-reliant on anything like that on the American side of this rivalry. So I think that will end up benefiting the United States at a World Cup like this one.
Quite something. A lot going on. How Phelps, Southern Rivalry. You can check out the book link in the description. And you can reach us at thesportscast.net, our website, or thesportscast1 on X and Instagram. We'll be live tweeting throughout the weekend. Huge weekend ahead of us. And how are you going to stay away from that jet lag?
I feel pretty good. I've been home for the better part of a week, and I'm getting up at 5 or 6, which is not my favorite, especially when the U.S. plays at 10 o'clock Eastern time. But I stayed up. I was fine. And I stayed up until they gave up that goal in the 90th minute. And then I was like, I'm going to bed.
I was contemplating last night how if I should have stayed up for the game. But
you know what you can't. It's like, this is not news to anyone. But if you got a game like that, go out to a bar. True. Stand up. Get a beer, talk to people. If you sit along, you know, by yourself on the couch and have a bourbon, you'll be asleep, you know, by halftime.
There you have it, Hal. Another good World Cup update show. This is your update. Thank you.
Cheers.